This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Sox Machine.
Josh Nelson, co-host of the Sox Machine podcast.
The White Sox are going to need another starting pitcher to get through the 2022 season and the 162-game marathon. So Rick Hahn's work is not done.
The internet's longest-running White Sox podcast.
What is their biggest concern right now?
That Lurie Garcia is playing way too much.
Amen and hallelujah.
SoxMachine.com.
We're all White Sox fans here. I know this is the home of the Chicago Cubs. We're all rooting for this team to make it to the World Series. There's going to be some highs and there's going to be some lows, and it's all about trying to find that middle ground.
Josh Nelson with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We want Machine.
Sox Machine.
Well, they ended up with a split, but it's not exactly the kind of feeling you wanted coming out of that series with what could have been. What could have been. There was so much possible, and here we are. Josh Nelson is here to talk about it with the numbers crunched by the Sox Machine. He is at Sox Machine _ Josh, and he is with us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Well, Josh, here we are. There's a lot of ways you can get a split. That ended up in a way that didn't exactly make us feel good about any of this.
Yeah, game four was absolutely terrible. I'm losing 21-5. It's just something that you laugh at. And I think the best course of action for the Chicago White Sox, obviously, is to take that game and throw it in the trash, pretend that it never happened, and try to move forward and try to take away. I think there's quite a few positives in games one, two, and three for the White Sox against the Houston Astros. And I think some of that is very relatable in this upcoming series against Cleveland, because the Guardians are just like the Astros offensively in the sense that they don't strike out a lot. And White Sox pitchers have a very tough time striking out Guardians hitters. And the White Sox starters in particular had a tough time striking out Astros batters. But in the first three games of that series, they held the Astros to just 8 runs. So I think it is possible for the White Sox to still have a very good weekend and to make this a very good week. And let's just hope that whatever happened yesterday, giving up 21 runs, does not resurface in Cleveland over the weekend.
What were the other positives that you took from games one, two, and three?
Well, I think the starting pitching, I came away very impressed. I know that Dylan Cease and Justin Verlander, that pitching matchup did not quite live up to the hype that we at Sox Machine and even Major League Baseball were hyping up as far as that particular game. But Cease only gave up 3 runs over 5 innings. Kopech only gave up 3 runs over 6 innings. And Johnny Cueto continues to impress, going 8 innings and only allowed 2 runs. If that trio could continue to pitch like that against some of the best teams in Major League Baseball, against some of the best lineups, it does give White Sox fans hope that if they could reach the postseason on the pitching side, they're not going to get embarrassed like they were last year. And that was, I mean, there was a lot of problems in the ALDS for the White Sox against the Houston Astros. But the fact that the White Sox starting pitching did not perform well at all against the Astros was very disheartening. Not the case this week. And the bullpen before yesterday pitched 8 innings, scoreless innings in those 3 games. And everyone contributed out of the bullpen in those first 3 games to keep the Astros off the scoreboard. So the pitching is what gives me hope that if the White Sox can get on a run and if they could finally overcome Cleveland and Minnesota and get into the postseason, that the pitching won't embarrass themselves like they did last year.
Okay, but there's one part of the pitching that we probably do need to discuss, and it was the guy who started the game yesterday.
Yes, we
have to.
Yeah, that was next on my list.
So what is this? What are we seeing with Lucas Giolito, and why has it not been fixed?
I don't know why it's not been fixed. I mean, you got his pitching coach and the guy that helped him make the transition from 2018 to 2019 as his current pitching coach in Ethan Katz. Evidently, Katz has got some type of lab, and it's helping Dylan Cease quite a bit. It's not helping Lucas Giolito. The four-seam fastball is terrible. The slider is worse than the four-seam fastball. As a joke, I made the suggestion on our show yesterday that Lucas Giolito should just learn how to throw a knuckleball and be Tim Wakefield for the rest of his career. if he's not going to be able to recapture any of the velocity on his four seamer. And if your average RPMs on a slider is around 1900 RPMs, I mean, when scouting high schoolers today and even college pitchers, you would get a 40 grade on that type of pitch. I mean, that's below league average. Lucas Giolito has two below league average pitches, the four seam and slider, and he's got one above average pitch, which is the changeup. This is a fastball slider league, and Giolito doesn't have either of those pitches. It worked against Detroit, and it may work against lesser teams like Kansas City in the remaining schedule for Lucas Giolito. But when he faces a good baseball team like the Houston Astros, they're going to crush him. And that's the way it's going to be for the rest of the season until he gets into the offseason. He goes into a pitch lab and he recreates his four-seam fastball and slider. And I'm going to keep bringing this up because I think it's really beneficial for Lucas Giolito to hear this. Your future earnings are on the line. Your last year of team control, your last year of arbitration is coming up in 2023. And then you're going to be a free agent. And you're going to shockingly find out teams don't want to sign pitchers who have a 5-plus ERA to more than a year-long contract. They're going to have you sign these prove-it contracts. And I get it. You had a great track record from 2019 to 2021. But as a starting pitcher, you have to consistently prove that you're that type of pitcher. Carlos Rodon was awesome last year. He's awesome this year. But all he got was a two-year contract, and one of those years was a player option that he's probably going to opt out of. So if you want a long-term contract, if you want to get paid, you got some serious improving to do this upcoming offseason. But from a White Sox perspective, at this moment, there's no way you could have Lucas Giolito pitch a possible division clinching game or even a postseason game right now. He is a liability.
Do we know the effect of the crackdown on Stickum and what that has done? Have you looked at his spin rates? I know some pitchers are creeping back up, and it's leading some to believe that maybe there's a surreptitious usage of something invisible out there that's making its way into clubhouses. But there is a velocity component, too. It isn't just spin rate. It is also getting the proper grip on the ball to generate the highest velocity possible.
Yeah, and Jordan Lisowski from Sox and 35th has been writing about this, and I think he makes a good point that there could be some problem with the hip rotation that could have been stemmed from Lucas Giolito evidently putting on 20 pounds of muscle during the offseason and throughout the lockout negotiations as he was the White Sox player rep. That is impacting as far as his rotation, which is impacting as far as his velocity. But I don't know how that's impacting as far as the spin. He just doesn't throw a lot of spin, and he hasn't thrown a lot of spin since the crackdown of the Stickum stuff. So I think he needs to go to a pitch lab, and he needs to recreate a fastball. Maybe he goes to a two-seamer, and then he focuses more on not try to strike out as many guys, but try to induce his weaker contact, maybe taking a note from Johnny Cueto. And then instead of a slider, maybe he goes back to the curveball that made him a wonder kid when he was a prospect at 18 years old and drafted in the first round. But it's very clear. This four-seam fastball and slider is not very good. I don't know how you get away from that at this stage of the season. I don't think you can go into a major league game, guys, and throw 60% changeups. I just don't think you can. So right now for Lucas Giolito, I know he's lost for words. And when he has these post-game press conferences, they get sadder and sadder when he has these types of outings against the Houston Astros. But again, he's got a 5.34 ERA. He is a liability for the White Sox. The White Sox should manage him like he is a liability and be very careful, try to push him more than five innings in any upcoming start.
What's your feeling on balking Bregman over to third and non-balking Bregman over to third?
I hate it. What's the point of PitchCom? Like, you have the PitchCom device for the White Sox pitchers. I thought PitchCom was to prevent that. And like, it's one thing if it's the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers can't hit. And if you move over to third with two outs, okay, whatever, focus on the hitter. Don't throw a wild pitch to allow a free run. But this is the Houston Astros we're talking about. They are one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball. You cannot give them a free base. And even if your concerns are legit, where you are concerned that Bregman is letting Kyle Tucker know where the location is going to be in the next pitch by standing on second base, man, that's nothing new. Like, we were taught little leaguers on signs that you give to your hitter. Like, that's not any particular kind of cheating that is bannable. But it's so frustrating and aggravating. Like, you have this new technology, and to give away free bases, I mean, Kopech allowing Altuve to steal third, and then boom, a sacrifice fly, and you're down 1-0, and you didn't even give up a base hit. You can't do that against good teams. You cannot give away free outs. You can't give away the next 90 feet. And I hope that the White Sox don't do this if the two teams cross paths again. There's a part of me that suggests that they will. I just don't think it's a good idea.
You know what's crazy about that, too? When Giolito did it, I actually think it cost them a run. Because the next ball that was hit 103 miles per hour exit velocity to center field. Bregman's not fast. If he's on second base, he probably doesn't score. At least you have a chance to get him out at home plate. It's easy if he's at third base. He scores automatically. And my thing is, isn't moving him off of third base supposed to be predicated on you not giving up a hit of 103 miles per hour exit velocity? Right. Like to me, it is such a show your belly weak move by both Dylan Cease and Lucas Giolito. And if Ethan Katz is teaching it, it's a weak sauce move by him too.
Yeah, I agree. I hate it. You can't do it. You can't do it against a team like Houston. Because in a way, you're kind of playing their hand. Be like, oh, we don't have a guy at second to help out our hitter? Well, thank you for putting him 90 feet closer to scoring. Like, the logic is not there. I hate it.
I think the more I look at it, Elvis Andrus has to play.
Yes!
Like, yeah. This isn't just a dude on the end of a bench. He's right now one of your top two middle infielders.
Yes, and in Cleveland, this was a surprise to me. A good nugget of information, not anything that I've been presenting on your guys' show all season long. Elvis Andrus, for his career at 45 games at Progressive Field, has an OPS over 1,000. He performs at his best in Cleveland, of all places. Maybe it's the batter's eye that he can clearly see the baseball, but he has his best games against the Cleveland Guardians in Cleveland. So here you are this weekend, and I'm with you, Dan. He's got to play every single day. Bless Lenin Sosa and Romy Gonzalez, they're trying. But they're rookies, and they need more seasoning, and they need more time to adjust in the major leagues. The White Sox don't have that time. They can't afford to do that. You're in a division race. So play the veteran every single day at shortstop. I don't care if he bats ninth. He needs to play every single day because at least you can count on him defensively to make all of the plays that come to him at shortstop. That's a benefit until Tim Anderson arrives. And the other nice thing, too, is that Andrus, if Yoan Moncada's got to miss a couple of games at third base, you can move him over to third base, and he's going to be fine at that position, too, defensively. But offensively, let's see if Andrus makes a good first impression with the White Sox this weekend, because he really does like hitting in Cleveland.
Okay, that's good to know. Your guy, AJ Pollock, you've been following him all season long. You've been the bandwagon for AJ Pollock. Is the player that he's been in the second half of the season the guy you expected him to be the entire season?
No, because he's worse when I lost the stake bet. Not that I'm angry about that at all.
You're very angry about that.
It was a $600 stake bet that I lost. not a cheap date. Yeah. So he makes plays, and he has good games. And since he's been batting leadoff for the White Sox, he has helped show some life for the White Sox, but then he'll disappear for a week or two. And you may look at his weighted runs created plus, and it's above 90. And then you'll check a week later, and it's back to like 78. And it's aggravating because he's getting close to the escalators in his contract that make it a lot more interesting, or at least to him, to pick up his player option for 2023. And the White Sox are going to be under some type of financial crunch if they don't make the postseason for payroll in 2023, because Jose Abreu is a pending free agent. But if AJ Pollock can get that player option to like $12 million payout in 2023, I don't know how he doesn't say no to that, or he takes the $5 million buyout and then tries to sign for more than $7 million elsewhere. maybe he doesn't like Chicago that much and he wants to go back to the West Coast. I don't know. But for A.J. Pollock, I mean, that whole trade with Craig Kimbrell and A.J. Pollock is just fascinating because people in Los Angeles cannot stand watching Craig Kimbrell try to close out games for the Los Angeles Dodgers this season. And as a White Sox fan, it's like, yeah, A.J. Pollock could have a good week, and then he could disappear for 2 weeks. And then we have the question of, well, maybe should the White Sox release him so he doesn't have to – we don't have to worry about this player option in 2023 being more than $10 million. So I just wish that he played at the level that he did last year with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, Lawrence, if we're talking about an outfielder that was closer to a 120 weighted runs created plus for the White Sox, he may be one of the best players on the White Sox this season in terms of wins above replacement. And we'd be so excited to watch A.J. Pollock hit every day. But this season, he's hovering around 80 weighted runs created plus. And I'm wondering if this is the decline to the end of his professional baseball career.
Is Luis Robert coming back? That's so funny. Why are people laughing at me?
Dan,
he's laughing at me.
When it comes to Luis Robert, like, what's the point of the injured list? All right, if he's gonna miss 10 days, just put him on the injured list. Yeah. The White Sox just lose credibility when they're reporting on player injuries when topic of Luis Robert comes up. They try to force Leury García to play through what was obviously a nagging knee injury until he just couldn't play anymore, and they finally put him on the injured list. And every day people ask about Luis Robert and Tony La Russa. Is he going to play today? No, and he may not play this series. Are you going to put him on the injured list? I don't think so. Okay, well, then what's the point here? Like, why are you playing with 25 guys on your roster? Why are you shorting your bench on purpose if Luis Robert can't swing a bat effectively right now?
Or catch a ball. He's only a pinch runner. And then you move back the time that you can retroactively put him on the IL instead of just putting him on the IL.
I know. It's just the White Sox do a lot of weird things. And the way they've been handling Luis Robert and his injuries this year, and, like, almost a refusal to put him on the injury list is right up there with one of the weirdest things about the 2022 season. So who knows? Maybe we'll see Luis Robert in the lineup, and that answers the question of, is Luis Robert okay? But until he's back in the lineup, I'm going to answer the question of, no, Luis Robert is not okay, and no, I don't know when we're going to see him again.
All right, well, then we need to convene the leadership committee. I just think emergency ad hoc meeting of the White Sox leadership committee. I know that Jim Boylan would bring his together in such a moment, so this is we have to bring everyone back and have this special meeting at the Justice League of America.
Meanwhile, at the halls of justice,
everything will be okay.
Josh, have a great weekend watching White Sox and Cleveland.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. You guys have a great weekend, too.
He's not having a great weekend with it at all.
Thanks for that. The old Irish blessing / curse.
Leadership group.
Yep, your leadership group.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we're invoking Jim Boylan, it's probably not a great sign. Joe Ostrowski.
Do you remember when I said earlier this week that I could envision this team losing 5 in a row after winning the first?
They're not going to lose all 3 of these, are they?
Okay.
It's Tristan McKenzie and Lance Lynn tonight. Elvis Andrus will save them. Something will save
Someone
has to. All right, let's set your wagertainment weekend with Joe Ostrowski next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I have a daily sports betting show.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
Oh, he's got a lot of Herbert Hoover in him. I got to tell you that much.
Let's go to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook, to welcome Joe Ostrowski. This segment brought to you by BetMGM. And Joe, I don't know if anything the Bears did last night moved the needle one way or the other, but it looked to me like a couple of bad football teams having a glorified practice.
Yeah, two teams with two of the lowest win totals that we have in the entire NFL. But if you were gutsy enough to bet on the preseason second game for the Bears, the under was quite the sweat. The total closed at 38.5 at kickoff. Earlier in the week, it was in the lower 40s, but 2 minutes left. It's 27-3. If you're playing the under, you feel pretty good. Seahawks touchdown, two-point conversion. They get another chance, first and goal from the four. We're at 38 points if you have under 38.5. Four incompletions, and you got Carroll with the three timeouts inside of 30 seconds. So it was quite a sweat there, but the under did get home. And on that win total, guys, we've talked about it a few different times. It opened 7.5. It was bet down to 6.5 because everybody is fading the Bears this season. It was juiced to the under. BetMGM now has it at 5.5. We have gone from 7.5 down to 5.5 this offseason. Same win total as the Seattle Seahawks. Only two teams have a win total that is lower than the Bears.
From what you've seen in preseason from the Bears, would you say that that number makes sense at 5.5?
Yeah. Yeah. How's Fields going to get through a year? How's that going to happen?
Yeah, that's a question.
I don't really... Yeah, I know some people that have played like Fields over on rushing yards for the season. Okay, the idea of him running for his life and gaining yards on the ground, that makes sense out of desperation, but tell me how long he's going to play. How many of these games is he going to be under center for? That's one thing that I did like and that I was a little concerned when I saw Ebner go down with the injury is, and he didn't return, is Montgomery under on the rushing yards. And that number keeps getting shorter. A couple of weeks ago was in the 900 range. It's 825.5. They're going to use three guys. How much longer is Montgomery going to be here? Game script, you wouldn't expect them to be in a position where they can run much in the second half of game. So that is certainly a play that stands out to me.
When it comes to the two of the top quarterbacks in the league, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, man. Are you in these Reddit streets about Brady?
Well, Dan was telling me that apparently he's on the Masked Singer.
There was a Reddit theory. Uh-huh. It started as a joke.
Not wet butt.
And then it became a serious investigation, like internet sleuthing about timing, etc., and trying to put everything together, saying Tom Brady is filming the Masked Singer.
So is Todd Bowles in on this? Because he says there's no timeline. The Reddit user was Cannon Fire, I assume for Nick Cannon, who's the host of The Masked Singer. He does have a deal with Fox, remember, when he retires, for $375 million. So Masked Singer's on Fox. Maybe he's doing them a solid to appear on the show. Filming has been going on throughout training camp. Filming starts up again tomorrow. And we're getting no details on this. Anybody buying any of this?
I don't know if I'm buying it, but I am curious with him being missing from training camp and Aaron Rodgers being like, these receivers aren't very good. Has that changed any way that the market feels about Green Bay or Tampa Bay?
Not a ton. Now, even before those stories started to surface over the last week, the NFC is kind of viewed as a conference that's pretty open, right? The AFC, it's so top-heavy. You have these great young quarterbacks. It's deep. There will be some good teams that are going to end up missing the postseason, just not going to make the cut. And then over on the NFC, there's not much depth, but there hasn't been much change. The Bucs are still the second favorite for the Super Bowl. The Packers are still the fourth favorite for the Super Bowl. They're 1-2 as far as favorites in the NFC. A lot of question marks about all of these teams. And then, Lawrence, you could throw in the third team, too. Well, is Matthew Stafford healthy going into the year? We don't quite know. And the reigning champs are the third favorite in the NFC. And they're going to start the season on that Thursday night game. And the Bills are now 2.5-point favorites at the Rams. So all of these teams expected to be pretty good in the NFC. Nobody seems to be buying. Every bettor I talk to, they're finding ways to bet against the Cowboys. It's just a matter of which NFC East team they believe is going to make that jump. And the history with that division is you never get the same team winning the division back-to-back years.
What's going on in the AL Central at the moment from your perspective?
Well, as far as the odds, the Sox are now the second favorite. It changes every day.
So volatile.
Based on the results. Yep. Yep, every single day. Right now, Cleveland is your favorite at BetMGM at plus 145. White Sox, second favorite, plus 190. But the Twins are right there at plus 210. As far as this weekend goes, a bet that is available at some spots is betting on series. And the Guardians are favored to win the series. It's minus 142. The Guardians are favored tonight at minus 130. So pretty close there with a total of 7.5. Now, most recently, when Lynn faced Cleveland, he was good. He had 6 shutout innings. But we may remember the time before that, he got blasted for 8 runs in 4 innings. And Jose Ramirez is a guy that's just dominated him. 23 at-bats, 3 homers, an on-base of .464. And McKenzie has faced the Sox twice this year, and he's given up only 1 earned run in both those outings. They're hitting only .208, the Sox are, against McKenzie. I think tonight certainly points at a Cleveland play here as a short favorite. But you know, earlier in the week, you were kind of thinking, okay, they're right there for the wild card as well. So if Cleveland or Minnesota were to take off for some reason, the Sox would be in contention. Well, now they're 3 games back in the wild card. And now, right now, they have to jump 2 more teams to make it in the postseason. So all the focus right now is on the division. And I was actually just looking at the win total of 91.5 at most places. That's where we closed before the season started. For all of those Sox fans that bet over 91.5, moving forward, they would need to go 31-12 to get the over. That's how disappointing this season has been.
Tremendously disappointing. Let's stay in Cleveland, Joe. With the news yesterday about Deshaun Watson, did anything change per the Browns?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. How convenient that is that the NFL is going to get their TV show against Houston, probably end up flexing that game. And yeah, there's a lot of different stories.
Because it's all
there.
About the football then, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, my no God. Question. Close. Win total is at 8.5. Before any Watson suspension was announced, it was at 9.5. Then it dropped to 8.5, and now it's heavily juiced to the under. So they are not expected to make the postseason. Division odds, they dropped plus 275 to plus 400. Conference and Super Bowl, same thing. 16-1 to 25-1 for the AFC. 30-1 down to 40-1 for the Super Bowl. If we're just keeping it to the football, I mean, they are a very talented team all over this roster, and it was just about being a quarterback away. But, you know, now you're also in those first 11 games a snap away of being forced to go to Joshua Dobbs with Brissett as the starter. So I'm not expecting big things. What is kind of interesting is in that division, I'd say most people are now going to go against the Browns. They're not buying into this for obvious reasons. And then are you going to buy into the Bengals to repeat what they did a year ago? You've got to buy somebody. Everybody's buying the Ravens. I am too. They had that 8-3 start last year before they were just crushed by injuries. But I'm really curious how Mitch Trubisky's going to start. It looks like he's going to be the week one starter for Pittsburgh. They've got that strong defense, number of pretty quality receivers that they have there. I think Pittsburgh's going to be a really interesting team to watch in that division, but not expecting a ton for the Browns, and I'll certainly be rooting against them a whole lot this year, but they have an easy start. Another thing the NFL helped them out on, it is a very soft schedule to start, beginning with Carolina.
Joe Ostrowski, have yourself a successful and entertaining weekend.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the weekend.
We will. That's Joe Ostrowski. We have High Noon next. And I've got a star-studded comedy film that is ready to be released, finally, after long last. And I don't think will be.
No.
I really don't.
It's very much not going to be released. Nor should it. And they should have thought about that.
Kind of with you on that.
Before they made it. I am going to talk about a coach who's so desperate, he's doing Junction Boy stuff. We'll do that on High Noon next here on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes.
Man, Bernstein and Holmes, best show in radio. I love it, boys.
Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Just simply the best!
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
We're at high noon. It's not really the halfway because of Cubs baseball. We've got about an hour left in this show. But we started out by talking about the Bears last night. And the outcome was fine. It was nice. And the team looks well enough coached. Just not real good. Neither one of those teams is real good. Lawrence broke down the pet peeve of the apparent willful misunderstanding. I use that word on purpose, of the broadcast of who plays what linebacker position and how. We also talked about the dark times that were that Deshaun Watson press conference yesterday. Really gross, really awful on a lot of levels. And the fact that Deshaun Watson feels that he is innocent and feels that the most he owes is a bland non-apology for triggering people is really unfortunate. Josh Nelson gave us his thoughts on the White Sox, and Joe Ostrowski his on some betting possibilities.
Nebraska head coach Scott Frost is not concerned about the excessive vomiting by Nebraska's offensive line. Quote, he's just working them hard, close quote. This, according to Saturday Down South, Frost estimated that there are 15 to 20 total vomits per practice from offensive linemen under new position coach Donovan Raiola.
He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke!
I honestly can't play it again. I can't hear that enough.
He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke!
Yeah, that's not really coaching. Just trying to make your players throw up.
I mean, I get the idea of trying to get the offensive linemen in shape, like running them to get them in shape because maybe you're changing things up. But you can't use the I made them puke as like a badge of honor. This isn't the Junction Boys. You damn near killed my friend.
He ain't quitting.
Come, what are we doing? Come on, man. And it's been Nebraska, like this thing with Scott Frost at Nebraska, him going back to Nebraska has been a disaster. I mean, you know, you got a family of Cornhusker fans.
Trust me, I know. I know the disappointment. A lot of them have gotten this learned helplessness now where they don't expect anything to get better ever now.
15-29 in the last four seasons. I'm shocked that they brought him back for a fifth. You keep that stuff.
He's getting his guys now. It's all going to come together.
He's trying to make them puke.
He's going
to
puke. He's going to puke. He's going to puke. He's going to puke.
Have you heard of a movie called All-Star Weekend?
I have.
Okay. I had not until I read this. It's awful announcing, quoting Jamie Foxx from Cinema Blend. Jamie Foxx co-wrote, directed, and starred in this movie. It's called All-Star Weekend. It was scheduled to be released in February of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 years ago, plus.
Yep.
So it was filmed even longer ago. The comedy features the story of two friends who are stalled by issues as they embark on a trip to the NBA All-Star Game. It was filmed in 2016 with a cast that includes Fox, Jeremy Piven, Robert Downey Jr., Benicio del Toro, Gerard Butler, and Eva Longoria. After failing to meet its initial target of a February 2018 release, All-Star Weekend made it to post-production in January of 2019. Even though All-Star Weekend is now ready for theaters from a technical standpoint, Jamie Foxx said the current state of comedy has kept him from releasing it. He said, "It's tough with the lay of the land when it comes to comedy. We're trying to break open those sensitive corners where people go back to laughing again. We hope to keep them laughing and run them right into All-Star Weekend because we were definitely going for that." Here's what he's talking about. You wonder, what is this? Well, the lay of the land and sensitive corners surrounding comedy refers to Robert Downey Jr. being cast as a Mexican.
I'm a Michigan man for life.
That's a decision Fox defended in 2017. Interestingly, the looming controversy of casting Downey as a Mexican mirrors the outcry Downey faced from his role in the 2008 comedy Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing, Dan.
I'm a Michigan man for life.
No.
That was Michigan man. It just sounded like Mexican. We just intentionally misheard it as Mexican. David Terrell, Michigan man for life.
Tropic Thunder was so brilliant. And what they were going for was so brilliant.
And they threaded the needle tone-wise. They made fun of making fun of it. They did everything right.
It was so well done that we gonna let Robert Downey Jr. slide on this one. You don't get to, fam. You don't get to go black face, brown face. Like we let Ben Stiller slide in Anchorman. With him being the Telemundo anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't,
get it all. Yep.
Two of those.
Right.
And considering what other movie happened to come out in 2018 that Robert Downey Jr. was a significant figure in.
Is it an Avengers movie?
Yes, Infinity War came out in 2018. So it's probably a really good thing that someone was like, let's not do that thing again where all of a sudden the $50 million man in the Marvel movies is out here doing brown face.
I'm a Michigan man for
He's
life.
Gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke!
Dan, I gotta read you this headline. This is from People. Mariah Carey's bid to trademark Queen of Christmas met with opposition from fellow singers. I just want to call my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you.
She wants to be known as Queen of Christmas, and who's standing in her way?
Well, there's a bunch of people that are standing in her way. There's singer Elizabeth Chan, there's singer Darlene Love, both who have called themselves or have been called the Queens of Christmas, and they don't want anyone to be known as the Queen of Christmas because Christmas, according to Chan, should belong to everybody. Here's the thing, though. This era of Mariah Carey's career where she is bought into the bit, like she does this every year, the day after Thanksgiving, it's Christmas time. And she does this on her Instagram and on her Twitter. Do you know how many copies of All I Want for Christmas Is You have been sold since it debuted in 1994?
No.
10 million.
Damn.
Of a single. Look, I get that Darlene Love was called the Queen of Christmas by David Letterman. And Elizabeth Chan is out there putting out great music. You take the L on this one. Mariah got it on lock. That's the Queen of Christmas. Just let her do her thing.
A big bag of beef.
Let's go, Mike Rankin. Mike Rankin is throwing a no-hitter today. Let's go. Our sound guy is throwing a no-hitter. I hope that you appreciate this.
Call your friends. Call your neighbors. Wake your pets. Anthony Heron joins us next, talking Bears and NFL on The Score.